Okay, the recorder is on. We're starting pretty close to on time. Baruch Hashem. Okay, we continue with Da'es Atzmecha. This is class number 20. So in the Hebrew book, we're on page Kuf Nun Hey. And in the English book, we're on page 128. 10 people with one goal. Okay. So, the author last week got into a new section in the book, the mystical idea of Hamtaka, of sweetening things, bringing people together, and really that's what it's all about, even though we have to separate at times to be able to understand better who we are. Then we have to be together, and we said that that togetherness is not through the power of the body. There's a book right there, straight ahead of me, the green book that's horizontally. Ah, good. And the only, as bodies, we are separate entities. As souls, we're able to merge together. And therefore, this term of achdus is only real when we are able to do this in a soulful way. And we mentioned as well that the root of goodness is based in nesina, in giving, and the root of evil, although it's not necessarily evil, but the root of evil is in kabbalah, which means receiving, taking, giving and taking. Taking is the source of divisiveness, giving is the source of getting together. And that's what we're going to pick it up at this point. And he goes through some very fascinating concepts this week in terms of giving and taking. And of course, being together. So, like, we could look at this classroom right now. And if someone was observing this classroom, you see about, I don't know, 12, 15 people in the room. And would you say that we are together or not together? We're learning the same text. Right? Some of us have a book, some of us don't, but we're all listening. Most of us, right? And are we together in what we're doing? Are we not together in what we're doing? Yeah. And the answer, you'd have to back it up with some support to what you're saying. The fact that we're all in the room here together, are we together or are we not together?
You're just focusing, because everybody now is thinking about your question, so everybody thinks the same.
Everyone's thinking the same.
No,
okay, but the fact that we're all thinking about the same thing, does that still mean we are together? The fact that, you know, I agree that there'll be different levels of understanding the class. That's not important. There'll be different levels of how people internalize the message. Everyone has their unique personality. You know, that I understand, but are we actually unified in what we're doing or not? That is the question to think about. And what we will see, he gives a very nice example inside the book that will give us something to think about. So let's look inside. Again, on the English, it's page 128, 10 people with one goal, question mark. Let's look into and let's investigate with an example that will clarify things. Ten people are gathered together to hear a lecture that's entitled How to Run a Business. Okay, I guess how to run a business in a financially profitable way. They all come to the class, one of these seminars. A lecturer is in front of them. Boger University, he's a university graduate. Baltor Shnei Benihol Asakin, he has an advanced degree in business. Umovazos Game Acharov Esrim Shnos Nisoin Bakomas Asakim Klalolomin. And besides that, he has 20 years of experience in big international business. Umalami Kalech Rechad Echlid Nasesi. He's teaching everybody how to open up a business. That's the course. So also Masara Nashim Higil Ishma Es Osadover. So 10 people came to hear the class. They all have the same goal. What's the goal? To set up a successful business. When we look at it superficially, there are 10 people unified. They all have one goal. Brewer mode, it's clear. Muskemes al kun, they all agree. Kulam shoskim umakshim chalmil, they're all quiet, they're paying attention to every word. Himare shilma al hartso, mechir gavoy, they pay a lot of money for the tuition for the class. Well, yirtsulahavsim enafilin lachas, they don't want to lose one word. So everybody is on their edge, just every word. In the Hebrew, we're now on kufn and vav. Al vamata hapnimios, we'll look a little bit deeper. These 10 people are really as far apart as you can imagine. Madua, why? Why are these 10 people who are all taking notes, all listening? They're all mamish, totally separated from each other. So he explains. They're all coming with the same purpose. To learn how to make a business. Why does everybody want to open up a business? To take care of himself. Each one wants to open their own business so they can make their own money and to take care of themselves. Nobody in the room cares about anybody else in that room, do they? Right? And if anything, they may become future competitors. Right? But when student number one is in the room, they're taking notes. Why? Why are you in this class? Because I want to open up a good business. I want to make a lot of money. What do you have to do with the other people? Nothing. Nothing. So they are totally not together. Right? They're not together. Just because you're all doing the same thing doesn't mean you're together. Avol kol ha'asara, im kol ha'asara hayu, magim lilmod eich osim asokin kdei liftoch hatzos. But what if all 10 of them, they're coming to the class to know how to open up successful businesses in order to teach other people who need help in making successful businesses? What if there's a lot of incompetent business people out there and they need good training? So these 10 people are really being trained how to train others. Non-profit. Let's add the word. Right? Alright? They all have the same goal. They're paying attention to the class in order to publicize this information for the betterment of mankind. You know, the economy is doing poorly. Everybody suffers when the economy is doing poorly. People aren't doing well. People need parnasa. We're going to go out there, we're going to learn how to do it, and we're going to give free seminars all around the country so people will be able to learn how to have good businesses. Now, that's a unified goal. They're all interested in the same goal. Do you hear the difference here? But the goal is just that I should open my own business, so I make a lot of money. Then everybody's only really concerned about themselves. So Nimtza comes out. There's a person standing and speaking to 10 people. Everybody wants to hear what he's saying. They could be totally separated to the greatest extent possible. Because the goal of each one is to take. He's only concerned about himself. If he couldn't care less the guy next to him paying attention or not. Maybe he understands, doesn't understand. He doesn't care if the other guy's going to succeed or fail. The only thing that concerns himself is the I. That I should pay attention, I should understand, and I should succeed. So we have 10 eyes in the room. 10 selfish eyes in the room. Now, this can also be the very exact same thing in a marriage as well. You can get married for the ani. That's all. Where the whole aspect of why, and we just started to talk about that last week, but now we'll talk about a lot more. The whole reason, if you ask somebody, why are they getting married? Why are you marrying this person? or, you know, even if we're not talking about marriage, talking about friendships, why are you friends with this person, right? So the whole reason you get married, you say, well, I was attracted to the person. There was a lot of excitement with this person. But this is all really, really everybody who first gets married. Everybody, without exception. And don't profess to be such a idealistic person, you know, when you know it's not true. Right? Everybody gets married for selfish reasons. If you're honest. Right? Nobody's getting married so they could do someone else a favor. Right? Right? And I'm not going to put any people on the spot today. We'd ask a standard person over here. Hello, Mr. Chair. I want to know, why did you marry Mrs. Chair? And he's not going to say, well, I always wanted to just be able to dedicate my whole life to make someone else feel good. To give all the love that I have to one person, to be the recipient of that love and attention and care. Hogwash. I don't think anybody in this room, I'm sorry if I'm judging you unfavorably, if that's why you got into marriage. Ever got into marriage is, what's the best deal around? Okay? It could be many reasons, it depends what decade you got married. You know, the older you get, the simpler were the reasons. You know, if it was, you know, I married a man, someone to take care of me. That's the old fashioned. Someone with a good living, and I don't have to work. Man will give me, you know, presents and all the things that I could want in life. That's one way of looking at it. And the man can say, okay, you know, I want to marry a woman who will, you know, clean the house and provide my meals and provide with all my other needs that I may have. And, okay, so now there's a price that everyone has to pay in order to get what they want. Right? As we'll go into more detail. But really, everybody gets married because they want to take. It's not because they want to give. Right? Anybody has serious arguments? Now's the time to bring it up. You could have been lonely and you want companionship. You could have been in a home where, let's say, your parents didn't give you a lot of love. You didn't get along with your siblings. On any kind of continuum of abuse, from subtle to strong, and you just want to get away, and this person you felt would give you a little bit of love and a little bit of kindness, and you're willing to pay the price to get that. But everybody, when they start off this game, they get into it for selfish reasons. So you could have two people in the same house for 30 years, and they're not together because they each have a different goal. The husband's goal is the I, and the wife's goal is the I. So they're no different than the 10 people in the classroom who are only together for a few hours. You could have a husband and wife who are together for 30 years and are still not together. They've never been together. They may have physically been in the same room, but they did not have the same agenda. There were two selfish agendas. Now they're good negotiators. So they were able to develop a good treaty that keeps them, it's a good, we'll call it, what's the word they call? An investment. An investment. You know, this expression, you have to invest in your marriage. You ever heard this expression? It's worth investing. So what, it sounds like a business deal. Like, why do you put money into a company? Why do you invest in a company? Because you assume you're going to get more back than you put in. Why? Did you take your money and put it in an investment to lose money? For sure not. Although many of us, you know, it ends up that way, but we don't plan it that way. You don't want the money to go in and just get the same. You want more for what you put in. Some people say, I invested in my marriage. Invested in my marriage so I could draw more out of the marriage. Right? That's really where it starts. Now, I'm not saying that's where it's ended, but it's certainly where it starts. Because that reason, well, why did you pick her instead of her? Well, you know why I picked her instead of her? Because she's a blonde and I like blondes. You know, I picked her because she's university educated, and I'll have much more meaningful discussions. I won't be so bored. While the other one's, you know, not so bright, and it's just going to be very boring with this person. There's a reason why you picked one over the other. If you just want to get married to bestow kindness to anyone, take the ugliest person in the world, be the biggest kindness. Take a blind hunchback, right? Somebody's got to marry them. Someone's got to take care of them who's not attractive. And that would be the biggest kindness, because for sure no one's going to be kind to that person. But obviously we're picking someone that we're attracted to, that we feel we're going to be able to take a lot away from. And I, since really what it means, now, of course, we're not that diabolical. We're not really thinking that, but that's really what's happening. Really, who's the one you pick to get married to? The one you think you could take the most from. Think about that. Because why did you take that one and not this one? Because this one gives me more. This one is more attractive, better wage earner, better all, you know, because you are the best. What do you mean the best? For what I could get. So think about that. I know that doesn't make us feel good about it, but if you really think about it, why do you pick certain friends? I'll get you. Why do you pick certain friends? Because I like being with these people more than the others. So I could take more from the others. And that really, and you could be friends for years. And you're just, because, and it works out. You know, you're able to take a lot and I'm able to take a lot. So okay, now where does the giving fit into that? We'll explain on the next page. We'll see where the giving fits in. And he comes with a very interesting idea. But that's essentially where it is. Now, you're so patient. Thank you so much.
I don't know how patient I was. But so my question is there ever, and I'm having trouble thinking of the situation, is there ever a time when you're actually giving and not taking? Because I'm having trouble coming up with something where, you know.
It's good you're having trouble.
Okay.
You're being honest.
Because no matter what you're doing, no matter how authentic you're being, if you're giving and you're getting enjoyment from giving, right away you're taking. Like even if you're doing something for a mitzvah, you're taking.
Well, you have to. Okay. Well, now you bring up another interesting point. You know, you get an enjoyment from giving, so you have to really clarify in your mind what that means. You're getting enjoyment from giving.
Yeah, it feels good to do something and to make another person happy. Genuinely feels good, and so I like to do it, but I feel like I'm taking when I do it. Selfish doing it.
What if you give it wouldn't feel so good? Would you still give?
Probably.
Yeah. What if you give to somebody who doesn't? What if you give to somebody who doesn't show gratitude? Continuously doesn't show gratitude.
Well, but if you are giving, there's got to be a reason for giving.
Ah, so what is that reason?
So that reason likely involves some element of.
Personal benefit. Okay, so let's hold that. It really raised a very subtle and important issue. So let's just hold that right now because we got to cover a bit more information. But that's really a really good point Lana is bringing up over here. Does my enjoyment of doing it take away from the giving of it? That's really what you're asking, right? So let's hold on to that. We're not ready. That's already getting deeper ground. Gotta get to some more basic ideas when we get that. We might not get to it this week, but there's a lot of pages on giving, so we're gonna be here for a couple weeks. So, that's a good question, and let's just hold on to that right now. Okay, so now where am I? So I'm on Muvan in K. I don't know what the English is. If you're true, I think it's on page 129, no? You finished 129?
No,
we still got a little bit more, I think. Muvanim came, so it's understood. Shikashi aratzon halito glani, when the person's desire is to worry about the eye, afsha kol nasab yosh, even though everything's done legally, ha'adam nirsham lemakom, for example, the person registered in the right place, shilam asakol mezuman merosh, he paid everything in advance, hulo choreg miklale hamakom, he doesn't go against any of the rules of the place. When he snag v'yosharav, he conducts himself properly. So we can't say he's doing anything wrong. The guy's going into class, paid his money, doing all these things. But the essence of each one is they're totally separate from the other person. Lumasos, on the other hand, Boifan Hafki, in the opposite. What if all 10 people were there to give over of themselves for the benefit of mankind? Hamedina nimsas b'shavol kilkali. The country has a bad economy. And they're desirous to teach others how to open profitable businesses. They hear the same words and they have the same intention. They want to understand the class, help the economy for the benefit of the country. Nimsa comes out. Since they're coming on the condition to give, but not on the condition to receive. Therefore, what they receive is receiving on the condition to give. And this becomes a new concept he's bringing out over here. They are really receiving, aren't they? Receiving information, aren't they? They're getting information. They're taking. But they're taking only for the purpose of giving. And he's going to talk more about it on the next page. And that really is just giving, not taking. Roimanu lefanenu gush shel asara anashim mechanim. Then we see 10 united people. He made it in front of him. He said they're not separate at all. Even though there's 10 people on 10 chairs, there's 10 separate people, but in their hearts, in their inner depth, they have one joint goal. And they're all there to make that happen in a unified way. So, really, what he's going to tell us later is that really all of us, every day, if we could, should make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, should make a spiritual accounting at the end of the day, and say, how many things did I do today that were really acts of giving versus real acts of taking? And it could be depressing. It could be depressing. So it would be a good idea, you know, first to at least something that's truly giving, where there's like no way you're getting any benefit from it. And that, you know, that's really tricky. Like, you know, how can you do something that you really is really giving and you can get no benefit from it? So, you know, for example, how about, you know, like calling your grandmother, where, you know, real old grandmother, that more often than that you really don't get much out of it. I'm not saying you never do, but usually it's more kindness to the grandmother than for yourself. I'll give you an example. Or like we talked about last week. Or how about, you know, like this morning, I like to do these things. Like you come into in the morning, it's not always everything's cleaned up at night. You know, busy. Last night my wife made 8 cheesecakes. And she complains why she's tired. I don't know. She made 8 cheesecakes. There was a lot of leftover non-dairy cream cheese, right? So it was going to go. So she had to, you know, do something. She made 8 cream cheeses. So, you know, she's, and whatever. So then, you know, so the morning I got up early in the morning and I come to the kitchen and it's a bit of a mess. And I don't have time to clean it all up. I got to do other things. But like, I like to take 3 or 4 items and clean them away so there's no way she knows I helped. You know, if you clean the whole kitchen, then you know what? So sometimes I will clean the whole kitchen if I have time. If I have time, I'll clean the whole kitchen. But that's not always so good. Now, I'm not trying to, like, get out of doing work here. But there are times I've done the whole kitchen, right? So of course, boy, am I gonna get such a nice compliment. And my wife's gonna feel, you know, it's a good flaw. She really likes me now more, you know, like, so, you know, because you clean the whole kitchen, right? But if you get to, you know, you take just a few items and it doesn't look like you contributed at all to the cleanup, but you may have saved 5-10 minutes. But, so that really is helping, but nobody knows you helped. You know? So that's a whole type of giving. Or it doesn't have to be the whole thing. It could be even a small thing, but it's you know, it just got taken care of. And you know, if let's say the housewife, whatever you want to call them, normally would have to do this, and now they didn't have to do it today. That is a giving. That is a real giving. But to the degree that, you know, you're expecting to get a little credit for it, then you've already taken away, right? So you try to, like, do sneaky acts of kindness, acts of giving, where nobody really knows that it's happening. You know, why don't you, if you know somebody, for example, is having financial struggles, so when was the last time you just took a wad of $100 bills, put in an envelope, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, just slipped it under their door and went away and nobody saw what you did? Right? Now, wouldn't that be a perfect act of giving? They'll never know you gave it to them. Never. And you'll never tell a soul you did it. Right? That would be an amazing act of giving. Right? Okay, I'm not suggesting we have to do this every day. But you should try to find one act that you know is a perfect act of giving. Right? Where you know you're not getting anything in return for that. That's really one of the things he's going to be teaching us to do. Right? And that's hard. But, you know, but if you do that, you know, as we go on in the book, that's going to make you a different kind of a person. And you'll become the kind of person you can't wait to help other people. And this is really a taste of what it's going to be like when Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, we're not going to need anything. And we'll only want to give. So that's a critical thing, to start analyzing your day. And if you think a lot about it, you know, you go to work, you know, are you giving your time? You're taking. You're only going for one reason, because you're getting a check at the end of the day. Believe me, if you weren't getting a check at the end of the day, unless you're doing some volunteer work perhaps, but if you're working, that is, for most of us, a taking action. Isn't it?
But how you work?
Because if the guy wouldn't give you any money, you would not do any work for him. So you're only doing it, let's be honest, you're only doing it because you're getting money at the end. Right? You don't get any money at the end. Right? So that's an act of taking. It's an act of taking. Now, it's possible that it could be an act of giving, but you'd have to go through a whole different mind transformation. You know, you'd have to really, you know, be on a different wavelength altogether, and you'd say, well, what I really want to do is make the world a better place to live. And by performing this service for people, it makes their lives better. You know? And Nebuch, you know, God put me responsible to take care of myself, and there's a person here that no one's going to take care of besides me, so I got to ask for some money for this body over here to be sustained, but because I would die otherwise. But that's a whole different kind of mindset of going about your work, which I don't know if we're ready for. But, you know, if at the end of the week you didn't get paid, man, you'd be awfully upset. You'd regret even having gone to work. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, are really acts of taking. And a number of other things. Making supper, you know, for everybody else. Is it really because you want to do it for everybody else? Or maybe you're expecting something in return from everybody else? So you have to start analyzing the things you're doing. And are they really the giving or the taking? Remember, the giving comes from the soul. Taking comes from the body. Bodies are separate. Souls are together. Okay? Yeah, was there a question? No? Yeah?
How you have to go to work every day to earn money, but how you do your job, there are different ways to do it, and there could be more giving.
Or more taking.
Or more taking.
If you're sitting around doing nothing in the job, then you're,
or how
you're
you
stealing. You're
the
taking,
other people.
Stealing. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can, you know, there's another way of looking at it. You say, well, listen, my whole reason I'm going to work is for one reason at all. Only one reason is to sanctify God's name. I'm going with my kippah or with my long, modest dress or whatever, identifiably Jewish. And I'm going for one reason, to let the world know that a Jewish person acts in a godly fashion. And I really wish I could do it for free. I really wish I could do it for free. And I want to go into this non-Jewish boardroom and show them what it means that a person of God, how they behave. I'm going to be a good ambassador for God, and I want God to be the recipient of this great sanctification of His name. And, you know, if I don't get paid, I will die. So, okay, I got to get paid. But I'm there for just that reason alone. Now, you'll know if which reason is the real reason in how you react to certain events during work. That will tell us very clearly what reason you're there or not, like if you get angry over foolish things or not, or things like that. So that would be a way, perhaps, of going to work in a giving way. I'm going to give God honor. That's all. That's why I have to be there. And I also have to give by taking care of. It's no different if I take money and give it to someone else so they live. I'm taking it. If my soul is giving to my body, then I'm still giving. My soul is giving to my body. Not if my body is taking. Do you hear the difference? The body is, the soul could say, oy, oy, what a sad body. The body's so hungry. Mom, she's Rachmanis. Body's gonna die. Okay, so I'm gonna give this body also. I have to take care of this one too. If I don't take care of this one, no one's gonna take care of it. And God gave me to watch this body. This body is gonna die. Oy, it's Rachmanis. Okay, I'm gonna feed it. Really, your soul is supposed to be feeding your body, not your body taking the food. There's subtleties. How are you going to tell the difference? Look how they eat. You know, there's something real interesting. Did you ever feed somebody? Right? Did you ever feed somebody? Now, it could have been a baby. Could have been an old person, an infirm person. Did you ever feed yourself? Yes. What's the difference between the two of them?
Speed
could be one of them. No, there's another one. I don't know. Did you ever get tired feeding somebody else? Yes. And you feed a baby, and then after, if it's a good eater, you know, after 15 minutes. What if you had to feed 5 kids? You know, you could tire feeding a baby. But I never heard anybody say they got too tired feeding themselves. Did you ever think about that? You know, all of a sudden, oh, this is hard. But you know, a person going through a 9-course meal, oh, my hand's killing me. I've been eating in, you know, like in these, all you can eat, you know, go to King Solomon's table for the Chinese buffet, and you're on the 9th plate, you know. You know, the only thing you feel is your stomach's exploding, but you don't feel, oh, my hand, I can barely lift it. You know, but when you're feeding somebody else, you know, okay, the first couple times, but then after a while, you start realizing, hey, you know, this is work. Right? Why? Because you're not really, your soul really isn't into the giving. You know, you're probably doing it for a reason. Let's say you're the nurse who's paid to do it. Well, you know what? You're only feeding this person because you're getting paid. And you prefer the old person who doesn't eat very much. So, you know, you give them 5 spoons and they're finished and goodbye. I can go on to the next thing. Look at this one. He's eating 55 spoons. And so I'm getting tired with this guy, right? But when you feed yourself, you never have any problems with that. So that's also an interesting one. So that's what come back to the beginning of the book. If you identify yourself as a soul that also happens to have a body, then your soul can have compassion on your body. And then you're not being selfish. Right? But if you really view yourself as a body, that there also has to be a soul, well, the body is just going to take the meal. And not getting it from any other entity. So that this, you could see this, all kinds of mental gymnastics over here when we're dealing with, are you purely giving, purely taking? And that, we have to read more to see how he defines all this. But what's critical, and what he's laid, the main point is, the more you give, the happier you'll be, and the closer you'll feel with people. And the more you take, the more distant you'll be with people, and the more unhappy you're going to be. That's the equation he's telling us. All right, we're on the next page, Kuf Nun Zion, and in the English we're at 130, yeah? Okay, Ba'omek Kol Maisa, at the depth of every action, Kol Hargosha V'Chol HaMachshava, every feeling and every thought, Tshichon Limonid Eitzel Adam D'Tfus HaSeh, you have to measure it this way. Are my thoughts, my feelings, and my actions, are they done as my identifying myself to receive or identifying myself to give? If I identify to receive, this is a source of separation and creation. But if I identify to give, that's the source of unity for everything in the world. Okay. The next paragraph, he's basically just saying, you know, again, falling back on, if you did everything in the first half of the book, it's going to be easier. If you didn't, it's going to be harder, so I'm going to skip that next paragraph. We'll move on to the next, really the next two paragraphs. You can skip them because it's just repetitive. So we'll move on. Now, ha'adam ka'adam, a person as a person, yachol lihischaber im kol ma sheish bebriya. A person really is capable of connecting to the whole creation. Really, each and every one of us should feel connected to everything in the world. Laman habriya, for the sake of the world, umeyidach, and on the other hand, in other words, a person really, I could be connected to something that's very far away. Umeyidach, on the other hand, yachol lihischaber im kol ma sheish bebriya, you could be so closed up from everything in creation, from the power of creation itself, even if people, you know, that you, are right next to you, you could be distant from them, depending if you're giver or taker. If the outlook of a person, in thought, speech, and action, if your view is always to give, every experience he has, anything that passes around him, he bonds with it, with the point of good that it's there. In other words, a true giver sees the good in every person and in every moment of life. But if the way he looks is to take, he could be living with his wife and kids. But in the depths, he's very strange to them. He's a stranger to them. A person can give love for 20 to 30 years, and he could be doing it all not for the sake of giving. Only to have somebody who can give it back. That's that investment we're talking about. That's giving in order to get. There's a giving because you want to get. And there's a receiving in order to give. Okay. So let's give some simple examples. Adam shemagia le supermarket. Person comes to the supermarket. Osef mutsarim, he collects a bunch of products. Ulachman Moshe shtar shel masayim shkolim zoni sidr. He takes out $200 bill. He gives it to the cashier. So what is doing? Giving or taking?
Taking.
Well, it looks like he's giving. Looks like he's giving a $200 bill. But really, zoni nesin, it's a giving of all almanasakal, but in order to receive. Hapula Rishon is Sinasina. Yeah, right. The first action was giving. Aksunasina shakal kula mavilas a kabbalah. It's only for the purpose of receiving. Yepsilahagdris omekapu'ul kinasin. We couldn't call the depths of that giving. Nasina masla kabbal, he kli la kabbalah. Giving in order to receive is just a utensil to receive. Imulo yitain esamasayim shkol. You don't give the 200 shekels, so yuchal kabbalah samitzrachal shvigasalikas. He won't get what he wants. The whole purpose of the giving is to receive. Lumasas, on the other hand, there's a receiving that is really giving. The dugma, for example, Adam shemakates ragel less of stokes and livyam. A person is like wearing out his feet, collecting money in order to give it to poor people. Tchilas ma'asav hikabal. So the first action is taking. But unotol kesav ma'achem. He's taking money from other people. But he doesn't take a penny for himself. As Komashas will say, everything he takes, he gives. That's a taking for the wanting to give. You know, it's interesting, you know, parents sometimes tell a child to go to sleep. And what is one of the reactions children have to this? They say, you know, what do you want from me, Ma? You ever hear that story? You ever kid ever say, what do you want from me? Now, listen to what they're saying. What do you want from me? Like you're taking away my freedom. You ever think about it? They think you're taking something away from them. If they're saying, what do you want from me? You got to hear the words. What do you want from me? You're taking from me. So what the parent, a smart parent should answer, I'm taking for you. I'm not taking from you. You know, it's very subtle. What's the giving and what's the taking? L'chein aziu, this identification, shodom bol lezal says massive, to identify your actions, our goshav machshav, your feelings and thoughts, and kabol nesina, if they're really giving or taking, tzorach shia penimi, it's got to be deep. Why am I really doing this? Let's get to the bottom line. You know, and we can fool people. We can want people to think we're such wonderful people, but maybe you just want to have a good reputation, and you're taking a big reputation. There's some people who want everybody to think they're mamish tzaddikim. I want people, you know, people I want to take that everyone thinks I'm a great person. I want everybody to think I'm just great. So you are taking big time. The price I have to pay is be nice to everybody. Right? But really I want to take to feel that everybody knows I'm a good person. Right? There's different things that drive people, but that's no less taking than taking money. Right? You want to have a good sterling reputation. That's a big take. And what you're doing is for that sterling reputation. Again, the always way to know, and this is what the Chazal says, what would you, if you're doing something publicly, here's what it's always a question. Doing something publicly, how do you know you're sincere? How do you know you're sincere? How do you know you're not even fooling yourself? So there's one real easy way to tell. Would you do the exact same thing with the exact same gusto and fervor if you're doing it alone in your house? Right? Because then there's nobody to applaud you. Right? So let's say, you know, let's give an example. Let's say giving charity. I'm only mentioning it because it's the easiest one to describe. So let's say there's, let's say it's Simchas Torah, you know, and people are in a good mood and they're giving money to buy honors, you know. So there's a lot of guys there and ladies there. And there's peer pressure and this. And the guy wants to show he's a big sport. You know, there's a certain pleasure. You know, people with money, different things make them happy, right? There's some people, they want to know, you know, he's a sport. He's charitable, and he likes that people know that he is. You know, now there's other reasons why people give money, but that's one real reason. So everybody's there, and you know, $500 for this, $1,000, $1,000. Another guy goes $1,200, $1,500, ooh. You know, at the end of the day, he spends $2,000. It cost him $2,000. The money's going to the shul, to tzedakah, whatever. So he said, oh, he gave $2,000. He didn't give $2,000. The price for the honor that everybody thinks he's a sport cost him $2,000. And if he's a smart guy, he goes to a poorer shul where the cost is less than if you go to a bigger, richer shul. Right? But then on the other hand, the honor is less. So if he wants more honor, maybe he'll pay more honor to go to the richer shul. Now, how do we know? How do we know he really is giving? Well, I'll tell you how we know. After Yontif, he goes to his computer, he goes online, and he just gives to a worthy charity, clicking in $2,000. Nobody knows, except for the person. On the other end, Joe Schwartz, whatever that is, and that's it. And then we know that when he gave before, it probably was for a good reason. What? I'm not discouraging. Listen, there's no problem. You can email Jeanette in the office. Just, and you know, it's very interesting, you know. I mean, I really know a lot. I know everything goes on in the shul, and I can't say half of what I know. I mean, I'm not allowed to. But I could just say, there are certain people in the shul, you know, and you'll never know who they are. You know, very discreetly, they say, you know, you probably need some money. Here, take $1,500 off of my Visa. And it's just a little quiet email to Jeanette, and that's it. And then when it's time to give, let's say, for the Yisker book, right? So, okay, you know, we try to get, you know, it's a fundraiser, so you try to get a quarter page, half page, right? So that particular person in the Yisker book gets the smallest ad. You know, like an eight, whatever the cheapest ad is, $36, whatever it is. And then right after Rosh Yom Kippur, he'll say, you know, take $2,000 off of my visa. While on the other hand, you've got people on the other spectrum who, you know, may give a donation and then say, you know, I already gave a donation. I want to get a free ad and make it a full page ad. So, you know, there's different kinds of people, different kinds of challenges. You know, we love them all, right? But obviously they're on different parts of the spectrum, right? But that's one good way of telling the difference. You know, does the guy, you know, what I really hate, you know, if you do it, you know, I don't like it. You know, when people, when husbands, especially when husbands do it, I really hate it. Husbands at simchas, at bar mitzvahs or weddings, they start saying these unbelievable praises of their wife in public. You know, which is first of all, it's not appropriate as sneistic, modesty. You know, the affection that you have for your spouse should never be shown publicly. That is like a very private thing. You know, the love between a husband and a wife, is, it should be, but it should really be private. It's no different than real intimacy, physical intimacy, and verbal intimacy. That's very private. You know, I love you, dear. Without you, I couldn't do anything. That's great. Say it to her privately. And you know what? Usually you don't find that. Usually, you know, and you hear this whole big speech, and 3 months later, the wife comes to me say, you know, he's terrible. And usually, the more lavish the praise is publicly, you can pretty much guess how terrible it is at home. You know, the guy who really loves his wife at home, he don't got to say it in front of anybody. I'm not saying that's all the time. I'm not saying sometimes a person lavishes to his wife in public and really loves his wife privately, but more often than not, you find the opposite. It's like, I remember years ago, I said, I missed a different shul, and the husband was mamish, saying this and that, and he was crying, and this and that, you know. 2 months later, they were divorced. It's like, so, you know, publicly, you know, and you think the wives really want to hear it, you know? The wife would, you know, how about when I ask you to take out the garbage, what do you call me, and what are you this, you're telling everybody, because in front of everybody, I got to say the right things. You're taking. Go say nice things to your wife when no one's around. Then you could tell. You could also, I don't know what's going through their minds when they do that. I really think it is because I see everybody else doing it, so they have to do it too. Because if they don't, then everyone's going to think they don't like their wife. You know. But I never did it. I don't do it. I don't think it's appropriate. I mean, you could thank them. I want to thank my wife for this, but all this gushy, mushy stuff, it's just, anyway, yeah.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
It's bothered me all day. Okay?
Since when? Since you got up?
Yes.
7 o'clock in the morning?
Approximately.
Okay, good.
Today was a little later, I think.
Okay.
In the National Post today, Royal Caribbean is taking people into Haiti. There's a private beach, and one of the things that they're explaining is we're doing this to help the people of Haiti because they need the money, and every time they come in, they're also bringing food, and they're dropping it off. But at the same time, this is a big business, and one of the things they're trying to do is run a business. So, what I'm worried about...
So I'm saying they're bringing people to vacation there?
Yes, on the beach.
On Haiti. So really they're going on the cruise ship.
They're going on a cruise ship.
And then they're going to give...
a private beach in Haiti.
Yeah, and then...
Not Dominican Republic,
yeah,
Haiti.
Yeah.
The private beach is one that they bring these very rich people into. But they're saying we're doing that because, number one, Haiti still needs the generosity of the... general travel public.
Right.
And the question I have is, I tried to apply this. I couldn't figure out, I could see the positive and I could see the negative.
Well, why do they need people to know about it? They could just do it without advertising.
I know this.
Well, okay. That's,
because it's something I know is their brothers on that particular ship.
They
were told, I think half explained to the passengers was that was one of the stops. Because usually what they do is they try to find another place or whatever, and they felt it was important to go to Haiti, which was their original stop, because they were bringing supplies and food to the people, and I guess that was what...
And the tourist dollars.
Well, I'm not saying from the tourist point of view that they thought it was a good idea. But you're right, it's a business, and they do what's good for the tourists.
My question in that was, I was trying to apply this, and I've been thinking about it all day, on and off. I'm not saying I spent the whole day thinking about just that. I'm saying this is one of the things, and as you're talking about this, I'm trying to apply it. And I still don't see, at the end of the day, I don't see any positive in what they're doing.
Well, it's better than them not going to Haiti.
It is. It actually is.
Would it be worse if they didn't stop off in Haiti?
And bring supplies to the people. I think.
Well, it's a little kindness. I think they're getting more publicity than the kindness of what they're doing. The real kindness would be, we've canceled our trip, and my $5,000 package is going straight to Haiti.
They were on the boat already, though.
Oh, okay, all right, fine. I'm just saying, it's hard to know.
Line as opposed to the people. I'm not talking about the people.
It's hard to know what's in their hearts, and let God judge them. I prefer not to judge them. It's hard to answer that question. I'm not copping out. I just I'm not the head of the cruise line, and I don't know what's in his mind really. You know, is it just to drum up more business? To me, I mean, I'm not going to say it with a definitive. It looks like it's a giving to take. That's what it looks like. It looks like that, but maybe there's more to it. Yeah.
The head of a household, for example, gives donations without anyone in the household knowing they're giving it, and does it all the time, and that's great. Yeah. Giving from their heart.
Yeah.
With no one knowing. How are they teaching their children the example?
So that's a good question. If someone is giving it discreetly, and you're their parent or whatever, so how are you helping your children? So you're not. So you, what you do is you do it with your children seeing it. So the example of the guy giving the money, you tell your child, "Come here, I want to show you something. It's a secret."
How far does that
come here, Moishi?
Within the family?
Yeah, you keep it within those who you are responsible to educate.
So let me take it
a step further. I know what you're going to ask.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure I've heard this kind of question before. So where do you draw the line? Who do you inform? Who do you not inform? Where does it border into really is your ego being fed as to other things? Mm-hmm. So usually the rule of thumb is if the rabbi asks you to do it and you don't want to do it. In other words, there are people, I'll give you another example. I mean, I'm involved in the fundraising of the shul, right? So you have some people who they want to give, and they say, "I don't want anybody to know." They tell me, "I don't want anybody to know. I want to give $5,000. Just take it. I don't want anybody to know. I don't want a plaque. I don't want nothing." So that's fine. So then I say, "I'm sorry, we're going to have to put a plaque up." The guy said, "I don't want a plaque." I said, "I know you don't want a plaque. So you've already," then I say it to myself, "He already proved to me he's a tzaddik." Yeah, but the problem is, there are other people in the shul who think that nobody gives anything. And then there's nobody gives to the shul. Mm-hmm. And if people think nobody gives, so they figure they're not going to give either. Mm-hmm. So the rabbi says, "I want you to have a plaque. I don't want it. Too bad. You're going to have it. You don't want it." That's a good way of publicizing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you understand? Because they really don't want it. They really don't want it. But, you know, it's important that other people should see that people are giving. There is a certain dynamic because, you know, there has to be someone to emulate. If you see there's 50 people giving $5,000 and you have the money to give, you know, you're going to say, "If everybody's doing that, I really think I should be doing that."
No, I understand that. So what if you're the person who then says, "Okay, Rabbi, I'd like to give $5,000 to the shul, but I want a plaque." Does that make him a different person? Because he might be doing it for the same reason you're asking.
So, you know, again, so that person, so only God could answer that question.
Okay. And if you...
I like to say that most of the people in the shul were not really that so concerned about their plaques. Baruch Hashem. Most weren't concerned about them.
If you put your
name
on a...
You know,
something
big... Before you go ahead, it just brings to mind Joe Tannenbaum of blessed memory.
Okay.
Joe Tannenbaum, he's got plaques all over the place. I mean, everywhere. And he said, you know, "I want it because I want my grandchildren to come to these places and to see that their Zaidi gave a lot of tzedakah so that they'll know they should give a lot of tzedakah." And Taka, one of his grandchildren, exactly did that. He said, "My Zaidi gave a lot of tzedakah and I want to give a lot of tzedakah." So, you know, you have to do that. But yeah, the person says, "I want to have a plaque because I want people to have a spirit of giving." You know, again, I can't judge him, and it's between him and God. And it could be he's totally sincere.
And
you know,
as a Jewish person, should we put our names on things just because we want the world to know that Jews are supplying?
So again, it depends on what kind of Yetzer Hara you have. Everyone's different here. If your Yetzer Hara says, I love honor. Everyone has a different challenge, you know. Some are lazy, some are this. Some say, I want to have honor. If you know you like your honor, don't have the plaque. If the rabbi says, I insist you have the plaque, then you say, okay. But if you really, you know, honor isn't your thing. You know, your thing is being lazy. That's your problem. And you really honor is nothing to you, then you should put the plaque up. Understand?
Yes. You know. Yes.
And again, you'll also you should be giving discreetly as well. That's another way. I mean, certain things you have to do out in public. And, you know, like with this economy, I'm sure there's people, private people with trouble, and they need help, and you give them discreetly. So that's wonderful too. But it's very hard to know, is the giving a real giving or it's not a real giving? And
with always letting your children know.
I'm sorry?
With always letting your children
know. Your children, like all my kids know, you know, the kind of tzedakah that I do.
Okay.
You know, they know. When the people come to the door, they know what I'm giving. I don't publicize how much I give and what I give, but they know Abba gives. And they know Abba's not rich and that Abba gives. And that's what I want them to know. They may not be rich, but they never turn anybody down at the door. And they're always giving when asked. That's what they need to know. Sometimes I'll have the kids say, here, give the check to the man. They should get used to giving the check to the man. Yeah.
I think the Rabbi Chalupa said that it's good to show that you give so other people
will
give too.
But provided that, you know, it doesn't feed your ego too much.
That's a fine line everywhere.
So, okay, so that's da es atzmucha. You have to know yourself. Get to know yourself. And that's what's important. All right, where am I up to? When we get into these discussions, I lose the place.
Let's finish that paragraph.
So on the next section?
Yeah.
The next, Gilu ha'achdus ha'kemes ha'dikot ha'nesina. All right, let's just do a couple more lines. We didn't get to the real fascinating stuff. That's still coming up. But this was interesting, I think. Koach ha'nesina, the power of giving, yi'ached es orim in kol ha'bruim kulam. Has the power to unify a person with the entire creation. It's understood. We don't mean he's going to connect with the entire creation, even the power of evil. No. But he'll connect with the power of good that is in the entire world. There isn't anything in this world that doesn't have something good to it. You can take a real rotten person, but there's still something good to him. And a person who's a giver will connect to that good part of that other person. If a person didn't have one spark of good, he wouldn't live. God wouldn't have him live. There's always something good. Somebody's got something good. So therefore, giving in the right way, when it's done in the right way, it will combine because the good of everyone else is coming from the soul. And by you giving, you're revealing your soul. So your soul connects with the soul. Soulful aspects of other people. There's people who have body aspects and soulful aspects. So the good is the soulful aspects. You'll always be able to find the good in other people. Everybody's got something good. Something good. And that's coming from the soul. And if you're giving, that soul has the antennas to pick up that good. It's an interesting story. The story of the Rebbe Reb Shmelka of Nicholsburg. So one day, a non-Jewish drunk knocks on the door of the Holy Rebbe Reb Shmelka. And he's looking for a place to sleep. So, I mean, the Rebbe is not really inclined to have a drunk non-Jew sleep in his house, right? So he said, I don't understand. Why don't you sleep in the church? You're a Christian. Why don't you sleep in the, why are you going to the rabbi's house, right? Go sleep in the church. He said, well, it's 2:00 in the morning, Rabbi, they're asleep. And I know the rabbi's always up, right? So the rabbi says, well, there's no place for you to sleep. Look, I didn't really want to have a drunk non-Jew in the place. You know, Jews suffered a lot from drunken non-Jews historically. So then the non-Jew said a line that really got the rabbi. The non-Jew said, you know, it's funny that God has a place for me in this world. The proof is that I'm alive, right? It's funny, God has a place for me in this world, and you can't find a place for me. So the Rebbe heard that. He said, you know what? You're right. So he let him in. And over time they became friends. But the point being that there's got to be something good in everybody. If there wasn't something good in every person, then God wouldn't have them exist. There's got to be something to be gained by this person being in the planet. Even a rush, even Paro. There's a lot to learn from Paro. It's a lot good to be learned. You learn how terrible it is to be stubborn. When you're going to want to be stubborn, you're going to remember, oh, that's Paro. I shouldn't be that way. There's what to learn, even in the most wicked person. There's something positive to learn. Or if you really believe in something, you stick with it till the end. Right? So there is a positive point. Because even the wicked, they're taking something good and just using it in the wrong place. But there's something inherently good. Now, I'm not arguing they're a Russia. But there's something good in that Russia that we have to be able to take out. Now, the Gemara says something very fascinating. But it talks about bribery. In the next couple of paragraphs, I'm just going to say it outside. It talks about bribery and how bribery, you know, influences people. And let's go about three or four paragraphs. And I just want to go to this last mushel, this last two paragraphs. I find it so fascinating. It's unbelievable. So I'm in the Hebrew, I'm on page Kufnin Test by the word Ella. And in the English, it's going to be around an example. I think furthermore, a person seeks to unite. Well, that's even more. Here is the answer. Okay. That's on page 132. This is beautiful. Let's try to understand this. Take one magnet, put it next to another magnet. What's going to happen? Naturally, they're going to connect. What if you put a piece of wood in between the two magnets? It will break the magnetic field between the two of them. What happens when you remove the wooden board? So magnets will come back together. Right? That's the analogy. Now listen to this. That really is the essence of all of creation. Meaning to say that really we are all magnetically connected. With a different type of magnetism, obviously. We really are all connected. Because if we were expecting people to get together, you know, from anew, starting separate and becoming connected, if we never really had an a prior connection, Haresha Avoda Haisa, because they would be very hard to connect. And really, built here, it's impossible. If we as people were never originally connected, we could never connect. We're so different. The real natural state of mankind is to be unified. That's the natural state of mankind, is to be attracted together. Because why? Because we have a soul. Our souls are what connect us. Kol neshamos hayu klulos b'adam rishon. All the souls came from first man. Everything is from first man. So we really share a common soul. There's an automatic, natural connection. Then they separated. Dor achad dor, generation after generation. Until we come to the Savior now. The unity that we ever do achieve is not a brand new unity that never was. It's just a return to the old way. So now, the truth is, all people are one. But everybody fashions their own individualized selfish needs. Dag alatzma, worrying about himself. Tfisa shal ratzon lekabel, the attitude of wanting to take. Utfisa zu yotzeres hafrada bein b'nei adam. And that attitude creates the barriers between people. When I start to want things, and you start to want things, and our wants will be in conflict, that is what creates the barrier. The magnets now, there's something being put in the middle. It's those wantings. That's what separates us. Now, so all you got to do, so what do you got to do to bring back the unity? Once we just take away the desire to take, and we made it real by, what's the opposite of taking? By giving. Once I give, shuv ein tzorech b'etzem la'achid. I don't need to unify because I've just taken away the barrier and the magnets unify automatically. By naturally, a person will combine with his friends. So what happens? So that's unbelievable. What he is saying, and he will elaborate, and we'll end with this, and we'll continue next week with this. This is such an amazing thing he's saying over here. He's saying that the truth is, because we really are souls, and really souls are naturally one, there's no reason why we shouldn't always feel bonded with other people. That is the natural state of the human being, and especially the Jew. That's the natural state. We had to do things to disrupt that natural state. My personal wantings, the body language, that I focus on being a body, and I want, and I want, and you want, and you want, and you want, and you want, so we're focused on ourselves, that's the piece that separates the magnets. So now I don't feel connected. You know, you talk about a spouse, you know, I don't feel close with them anymore. What you're really saying is, because I put my own will in between, and now we don't feel that attraction anymore. So what do you do to bring the attraction? What will the good marriage counselor tell you to do? You got to get rid, all you got to do is get rid of the separation. That's all. A man and a woman would naturally, their souls would naturally combine. You don't have to do anything. Just get rid of the separation. Well, how are you going to leave the magazine? Just get rid of the piece of wood. All of a sudden they're going to click. So how do you get rid of the taking? Just start giving. Just start giving. And that is the simplest answer to all marital problems. Just change your attitude. Really, what happened 30 years ago, both of you were the biggest takers in the world. But you figured a way to negotiate the deal that you're going to get enough that it's worthwhile. As time passes, the negotiations broke down. Or one had more to give than the other. Or what you were giving me, I don't need anymore. I need something else. You don't provide that for me. All you were when you started was a bunch of selfish takers. And you just developed into greater selfish takers. And now, but you know, you're not able to work out a deal. So the secular marriage counselors are just very good at making deals. Let's draw up a contract. You promise to do this 3 nights a week. You promise to do this. What are you doing? You're just making deals. You're just negotiating. The smart marriage counselor, let's just get rid of the piece of wood that's been separating you the whole time. The real marriage counselor say, you know, you both have been selfish the whole time. Why don't you change your focus? And why don't you just try to give? Now, that's going to be a very big hurdle because they don't know what he's talking about. Are you crazy? Why should I give? Because that's the logical way it works. Once you're giving, you're shutting down the body taking. And once you're giving, sincerely giving, then, so he'll say later on, for example, if I'm having trouble getting along with you, all I have to do is give a lot to this guy. And I can feel closer to you. Why? Because the fact that I'm giving already, where he begins to take down those barriers. Sometimes it's easier to start with other people than the person you don't like, but eventually you're going to get to the person that you do like. The act of giving alone is what breaks the barrier. It lets the neshama come out, and it puts the body in the background. It's not natural. It is natural, but we've become unnatural. People find it hard to give. They really do. It's really hard to give unless you know you're getting some back. So since you find it so hard to give, that creates the barrier. Me first. So you get two people with me first, they don't get along. But if you have to say it's not me first, my neshama has no jealousies, has no desires first, but how am I going to activate it? By just giving. Once you just give, then you're just getting rid of the barrier. That's all it is. The barrier goes away. And then why shouldn't I give? It's my pleasure to give to you. Now that is eventually, that really is the marriage model the way it's supposed to be. And you really want to train people. This is what a whole education has to be. You have to say, listen, I'm telling you why you're getting married. You're getting married for one reason only, is to learn how to be a giver. That's what you're getting married for. What? Yes, that's what you're getting married for. Why do I want to do that? Because then you will reveal your soul. Why do I want to do that? Because then you'll get to know who you are. And if you know who you are, then you can really genuinely love someone. right? And that'll be a much deeper closeness than you'll ever have with anybody else. That is so foreign to the whole world. But that's the truth. And, you know, and if there's marital problems, there could be a lot of past bad blood. You can say, well, why should I give? So you got to say, well, it hasn't worked the way you've been doing it till now. You know, what's going to be your solution? Let's hear what your solution is. Well, my solution, we'll get divorced, and I'll find somebody else I could take from. And I'll just try to negotiate a better deal with the next guy. Well, you know, how long is that going to last for? But you're still coming out as the selfish one. Now, so I'm not talking about where you know one party isn't interested in reconciling things. But if, let's say, you know, many marriages, there's conflict, you know, and then you always, people talk about, well, you know, why don't we get divorced? Yeah. Well, guess what? You want to be happily married to the next person? It's 10 times harder. You know, if you put the same effort with the original one, it'll be easier than with the new one. You know, I'm not saying there's exceptions. You have people who are, difficult to deal with and things like that. They may not be normal. But I'm saying, there's no classical case, but in a case where really it's both parties are being selfish, let's just say. I'm not categorizing all divorces that way. I'm just giving a textbook type of case. I know there's no textbook case, but if, let's say, you're dealing with two selfish people and that's why they're not getting along, right? So it isn't going to get better if they get divorced and find somebody else. It will not be any better, you know, maybe for a while, but eventually it catches up with you. So you go, just try to work it out with the first one. The problem is you're not a giver. That's the problem. It doesn't matter who you're married to. So why just work on being that giver? Get rid of that piece of wood in between the magnets, and then you can put it together. So think about that. But that's really what the Torah is telling us. The more you can learn to just give without expecting anything in return, the more you give, the more you're pulling the separation out, and the magnet begins to pull. So, let's start this week's homework, right? Really analyze in the relationships you have with people, really how much is it really giving, and how much is it really taking for the purpose, giving for the purpose of taking, and what kind of wall do you really feel exists? And then try to think of ways to give without expecting anything back. And over time, that wall.
Is it possible?
What?
Is it even possible?
It has. Of course it's possible. Of course, you just got to get used to it. It's possible to anything.
I always have troubles with this concept, unconditional love, unconditional.
You got to practice. You got to practice with small things. Like I said, you know, take out the garbage when nobody's looking. Like, do a lot of those small things. And you gotta keep telling yourself, this is what the will of God is. I'm gonna work on it and work on it and work on it. Yadavin Tashem to help you, that you will be able to feel it. But it has to be that the equation, that's the way it has to be. There's no other way, because that is, if you're giving, the soul is coming out. And in the beginning, it's hard. In the beginning, it's hard. Okay, anyway, I gotta give my other class. They were kind, they gave away 15 minutes. Okay, we'll continue next week, God willing. We'll get further into this.